G'day and welcome to Macca's Podcast. I love the scope of our program, anything and everything. If you want to get in touch with Australia, this is the place to do it. Settle back and join the Australian phone box. See you on the road.
Get on with it, Macca.
And this is a little scribble note I get from time to time from a bloke called Joe. Joe lives on his own in a boarding house in one room. He's been a picker all his life. He's the other side of the Australian, you know, the Australia with multi-million dollar sports stars, worked hard all his life. But he sent me this. He says, Ian, 2 days ago I was on a bus in Randwick, that's in Sydney, and I managed to see an advertisement of a trip on the back of a bus which said, come to Mildura on the banks of the Murray River, and it showed a picture of the bridge with all the boats around it. Book now. Not me. I've been on the Pickers train, which was a free trip. But you must at least stay for 3 weeks to pick before you can get back to Melbourne. I wrote a poem about my thoughts of Mildura. It goes thus. Up in Mildura, don't let them fool you about sunshine and all that. Grape picking is for a rat. You get up at dawn and work like hell till the heat of the sun beats you. Then you concede defeat and you watch as the blood drips on the ground. Actually, you don't pick. You have a knife and cut, which is much faster. In the process, you also cut your hand. Give me cherry picking any day to grapes. I became a linesman for Telecom for 29 years, and I always took my annual leave at cherry picking time, and I picked cherries. This is on a little scrap of paper. He started his letter with Ian Biro, but at the end he's finished in pencil. He says, sorry, Biros are unreliable. 1300 700 222. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. It's Craig here. I'm out in the middle of WA, currently carting iron ore down the highway.
Well, where's the middle of WA? Whereabouts are you?
I'm in between, I laid out of the mine in Wiluna, and I'm heading south down the Goldfields Highway to a railhead, Malcolm Railhead, which is near Leonora. And I'm driving a super pipe with 140 tonnes of iron ore on it at the moment.
Wow, wow. And you've been hot over there, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been a pretty warm night. It's down to about 30 at the moment, but yeah. It's been, during the day up here lately, it's around about 41, 42 degrees. Get used to it.
Craig, what's your story? How long have you been driving and carrying iron ore?
Well, I'm a fly-in, fly-out worker, so I come out here for a month at a time. And I fly back home to Melbourne for a couple of weeks. So this is actually my last shift at the end of my third swing. So I've got 2 weeks of R&R coming up on Monday. I'll fly out.
So and do you do that around the place? So you that's your life? You do that fly in, fly out driving?
Yeah, do that back to the same place all the time, doing the same stuff, same run. Just 4 weeks on and 2 weeks off.
Well, I suppose that's all right. How long have you been doing that, Craig?
I've been doing this since October last year. Before this, I was doing interstate on the East Coast, but I actually prefer doing this.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be as busy, not as much traffic. On the East Coast is pretty busy all the time on the highways, isn't it?
Yeah, there's not as much traffic out here. All the traffic out here is other clients like myself, just running from all the mine or, you know, for all the mines around the place. So,
yeah, all right. So you'll finish. What sort of a day do you? How long's your day? 12 hours, is it?
Yeah, about 12 and a half hours. So I should be done around about 11 o'clock Sunday morning. Then I fly out back home on early Monday morning.
Well, have a nice rest, mate. Have a nice rest.
Thanks,
and what do you see out your window this morning? Not much.
Just it's still dark at the moment. It's just bush. Yeah, just watching out for cows at the moment. They wander around the roads a bit at night.
Yeah, well, you've got a lot of weight on board, haven't you?
Yeah, 140 tonnes. Each weight, so all up to about 195 tonnes.
Good on you, Craig.
Charles.
Yeah.
Cheers, mate.
Good on you, mate. Where are you, David? You better tell us.
G'day, Macca. I'm on Royden Island, which is just off Flinders Island in the Bass Strait.
What are you doing there?
Well, we're going on a bit of a paddle from Victoria down to Tassie, paddling the Bass Strait in sea kayakers. There's three of us. We call ourselves the Strait Crackers.
Well, that's very adventurous thing to do.
Yeah, it is. We're happy we're here with the big ocean crossings, kind of from Wilson's Prom down here to Flinders. There's three or so big crossings where you're in exposed ocean, so we're very happy to be down to Flinders and got those out of the way.
Yeah, and what was that like?
We got really lucky, Macca. The weather was good to us, all respect to the ocean at all times. We had a couple of tailwinds, so we've got little sails that we can put up. There was a few spicy moments, but in general, we were super lucky with the weather and, like I said, very happy to be closer to land.
What a mighty thing to do. What a dangerous thing to do for those of us who are land lovers. I mean, that's just mighty. You obviously do this quite a bit, do you, David, this sort of thing?
I've always enjoyed a bit of an adventure. I'm an outdoor ed teacher, but risk is certainly something we take very seriously. We've done loads of training for the trip. We've got kind of plan A, B's and C's. We've got location beacons and all that kind of stuff on us. We just have to pick the weather window. You'd be crazy to go when the weather's not right. So you just have to have plenty of time and pick the weather window that's going to suit. And, yeah, I believe with the right training and stuff, you can certainly do it safely.
And what happens if you're out there in the middle between, you know, Melbourne and where do you leave from in Melbourne?
We left from Port Welshpool and then we paddled down to Wilson's Prom, Refuge Cove. And then, from Refuge Cove, it's about 50 k's over to Hogan Island and then Deal Island and then over to Flinders.
Uh-huh. And so what happens if you're out there and it turns sour? Because it can do.
Absolutely. It'd be pretty scary, but we'd kind of bunker together. And sometimes I think you just have to ride it out, just even if you can hold your ground, and then kind of assess again once it's moved on.
Yeah, and you've been in that situation before, I suppose, have you, where you've got big waves, what, 5, 10 metre?
Yeah, not that big, Macca. We wouldn't go out if it was predicted to be that big.
Yeah.
So the trick, like I said, is really to watch the weather super closely. That's all we talk about, really, is the weather.
Yeah.
And then, if something nasty's coming, you just don't go out.
So you said you're on Royden Island now, and that's near Flinders?
Yeah, it's kind of on the northern tip of Flinders. It's a beautiful little island. I've just climbed a peak this morning. I've got a 360-degree view. There's a little hut on the island. It's a magic place to be.
And you take your food, what, you make a little camp and stuff like that when you stop on these islands?
Yeah. We've got freeze-dried meals, so the trip generally takes about 2 weeks. We actually might get lucky. It might be a little bit earlier. You have to plan to have three or so bad weather days or blocks of that. We stayed for a rest day on Hogan Island. We caught some fish and ate the fish for dinner. So, yeah, you're all self-sufficient within your kayak.
So if the weather looks crook, you just stay where you are for a day or so?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, people get stuck for a week sometimes. We kind of plan to be stuck on a couple of different places for 3 or 4 days. But luckily, we haven't had that happen.
Yeah, well, a lovely thing to do. I just imagine it. But you need to be, obviously, you're pretty strong and fit because to do, what's the distance, total distance you paddle?
It's about 320 k's.
Wow.
We did about 65 tomorrow. Yesterday. That was our longest crossing.
And what's in front of you now?
It's happy days now. If I'm going to be honest, we're going to White Mark on Flinders and there's a pub there.
Well, that sounds great, Dave. And you do these little projects now and again, or you live, what do you do, David? You said you're a phys ed teacher?
Yeah, outdoor ed. So I take kids camping and stuff. I work in Kangaroo Valley on a program called Glengarry. Year 9 boys come there for 6 months, Scots College students.
All right.
So that's my gig. And then, every few years I like to plan a bit of an adventure and get out and do something different.
Yeah, I'll say it's a lovely thing to do, mate. I can only dream about it, really. It's like John just said to me, do you ever know that feeling, Macca, of waking up on a Sunday morning and you're by a river and you're all by yourself? And I said, no, I don't know that. I don't know that feeling, John. I've never woken up by a river on a Sunday morning for a long, long time. But anyway.
You better get out there, Macca. Message to all those people out there. Yeah, get off your couch, get off your phone. There's some great adventures out there just waiting for people to attack.
Oh, well, you'd have to have a tandem kayak, mate, I'd sit in the back and just talk to you, but I wouldn't be doing much work, I don't reckon. Anyway, yeah, good. Sorry.
I was just going to say, hats off to the other guys, my team, the Straight Crackers. Paul's an apple farmer up in Pozier near Stanthorpe.
All
and
right.
And then Christian's a special ed teacher near Nowra.
All right. When's the apple season? That's coming up, what's that, about March or April or something like that, is that?
Yeah, it's happening now. He's not in the good books with all the family on the farm. He's out here enjoying the Bass Strait, and they're packing crates of apples.
Oh, there you go. What's his name?
Paul McMahon.
Paul, okay. All right, yeah. Good on you. Great to talk to you, Dave. I'll bump into you sometime. Where do you live?
I live in Broughton Vale, which is near Berry on the south coast.
All right, I'll look you up sometime. Good on you, Dave.
There's always a warm fire and a blanket for you, Macca.
And a kayak, all right?
Yeah.
And a paddle. See ya.
Good on you. See ya, mate.
Bye.
5:30 Sunday morning, when the new day's dawning, turn the radio on to ABC. The show is a cracker, the host is called Macca. Australia all over's the place to be.
Good morning and welcome. What do you think of that? I'll tell you the story about that. I have a letter. It is a letter from Ian Timmons. His name's Ian Timmons. And he says, I hope you'll take time to read. Did I say good morning and welcome? It's lovely to have your company. He says, I hope you'll read this. I'm 81. I lost both parents and sister to dementia. I'm trying my hardest to make the best of my final years. That said, I've written poems and song lyrics for decades now, but never found a musician who was interested in trying to put some music to my lyrics. They didn't even want to know about them. I even offered to pay people a couple of times, but without success. Perhaps my lyrics are rubbish, but they won't know if they won't even look at them. Now, since I have the musical talent of an earthworm, I've been a frustrated musician, says Ian Timmons. That's what he says. I'm just looking for something. Anyway, sorry. recently, however, along came AI. Now, I heard the comments on your program on 14th of December about AI, and a week before that too, I think. I'm not happy about using AI to develop a song, particularly where breach of copyright could be an issue, and sympathise with musicians who rail against it. But in my case, it has allowed my words to take form so others can hear them when musicians weren't interested, even the odd time when I offered payment. Don't I have the right? Or don't I have that right, he says. I contacted APRA, it's the performing arts people, about the issue and received the advice that provided my original work was created by a human, even with the assistance of AI, then it could be registered. I write all my own lyrics. So now I have begun to use AI to convert my words into music. And he sent me four songs. One's about Australia Day. What's the other one? The other one's about life being tough for a farmer. And what's the other one about, Kel? I can't remember. Emu. That's right. It's about an emu. And they're all turned into songs. I may play them, but I just thought it was a catchy little song. And everybody I play it for, have a listen to the first bit. It's pretty clever. And see, there he is sitting at home. No musician. No, yeah. Blake's written the poem, yeah. So all of a sudden, and that's why my friend said, who's been in the music game a long time, he said, mate, it's the new wave of music. Music's progressing and whatever, or some may say regressing, but it's moving on. It's just a change. But this is, so he wrote his little poem, put it into, I don't know, ChatGPT or GPT or whatever, and it turned up with this.
From busy city streets to lonely outback on radio.
So it's pretty. Yeah, it's the way of the future. Like it or lump it, and he can register that with APRA. And
5:30 Sunday morning.
Anyway, just thought I'd mention that to you. Good morning and welcome wherever you are. Lots of things this morning. G'day, this is Macca.
Hi, Macca. This is Des from Panania, mate. Welcome back.
Thanks, Des. G'day.
Now, I know you deal with a lot of people. But not long before you went on your break, I rang you and told you about a racehorse I've got with Kieran Maher called Axius, who had been nearly put down as a baby because he got a broken jaw from another horse. and he'd won a nice race at Randwick. Mm. But while you and Lou were away, we took him up the Gold Coast because he was bought there at the Magic Million sales, and we put him in a 3- and 4-year-old race on the Saturday, and he carried 60 kilos with Nash Arula on him. He ran third, ran a great race. Nash accidentally dropped the whip at the 200. We're not sure what that would or not. So what happened was, while we were up there, said, well, we'll have a throw at the stumps. There's a $1 million race on the following week. It was for much harder race. I got 100-1 about him on the Monday because I didn't know he'd get a start, and he won. he won the $1 million race for Kieran Maher. Timmy Clark rode him, and it's just such a fantastic story because he's won 5 out of 9, and he's so lightly raced because of his injuries, but he's just like a miracle.
And how old is he? What's he, 3-year-old, is he?
And he's just turned 4.
4.
He's only had 9 starts. He's won 5 out of 9, and now he's won $835,000 in prize money. And that first prize money for that race was $579,000, and I've got 5% of him. And I'm a very proud and lucky owner.
Yeah. How many owners are there?
There's, say, 20 of us with 5% each.
All right. There you go. Well, that's a bit of fun.
Oh, mate, it's just the most wonderful feeling. And because we just sort of like had a throw at the stumps, but you know, Kieran Maher has got the most horses in Australia. Like, he's a wonderful trainer. And this horse mainly gets trained out of Bong Bong by Johan Gerard Dubord. He looks after him. And it's just such a wonderful thing for everybody because, as I said, you heard about a throw at the stumps. Well, ours was a throw from the boundary aiming at one stump, and we won. And everybody who knows back him, all my family, friends, they're all so happy for me. There's not one bit of jealousy. It's just a wonderful thing, and you don't expect it. But I only rang you because I always remember that song where one of your songs for promos is, you know, "Oh, your horse has won the cup."
Yeah.
Well, he didn't win the cup, but he won for us. That's just a wonderful thing, and I'm more thankful than excited about it. I just realised how lucky I am to have a good horse, and he now has to race in listed races and group races because he's just, that's just how good he is. So it's
he's a sprinter, is he? He's not a stayer, or
well, a funny thing, Macca, he's by Justify, who won the Kentucky Derby in America and was a Triple Crown winner. And his mother's the daughter of Reduced Choice, who was one of our great milers. But for some reason, at the race, we're getting wins out of him in the sprints. But I think he'll get out the 1600. I think he's – keep an eye on him, mate. Write him down, AXIUF. No, I'm serious. I'm not making up. I think he could win a Stradbroke in the winter in Brisbane. He's won on every surface. He's won on a good 4, a soft 5, soft 7, heavy 8, and heavy 9. That's his 5 wins. And he's been ridden by Nash Rewilla and Timmy Clark, like really good jockeys.
Well, they'd be able to tell you if they think he can get further, if they think he can get further.
Know. Oh, they got, well, Timmy Clark's got a huge rap on him. Actually, we're lucky with Tim Clark. He's ridden him twice, right?
Yeah.
He won a $100,000 super maiden on him. Now he's won a $1 million race. So I said to the connection, like the trainers, that said, he can only ride even races where it's all noughts at the end. That's his luck. but it is great to have you back, Megan. I just want to pass on one thing. Angela Caterns, when you were away, she was fantastic.
That's good.
Her voice hasn't changed since she was 40. But it's great. And I've just worked all night. I worked till 6 a.m. on the railway station.
Right.
But I'll stay awake and listen to the finish your show till 10 o'clock. Then I'll try and get some sleep. That's how much I love the show.
All right. Well, good on you, mate. I'll keep my eye out for that. And I suppose everybody who's listening will too.
Well, I hope they all get a win out of him.
All right, mate. Good on you.
Thank you, Macca. Love you so much.
Thanks, Desi. Bye.
Bye, mate.
G'day. This is Macca.
Me?
I don't know. I suppose so. Hello.
Michael from Kiama. About Honeysuckle Creek. And I can confirm that Honeysuckle Creek did actually film Armstrong coming, or they broadcast the signal, Armstrong coming down the ladder and the first 10 minutes on the moon, because Parks couldn't bear, because they couldn't get down. But more importantly, the Honeysuckle Creek guys, because the camera, American know here, the camera on the lunar lander was installed upside down. And the Honeysuckle Creek guys worked out how to re-invert the signal. And because if you go to the Honeysuckle Creek station closed nearly 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go there, there's still a plaque where they say where the aerial was, because they actually moved the aerial up to Tidbinbilla, and they only decommissioned it not long before I left Canberra in 2011. They decommissioned the old Honeysuckle Creek aerial. But if you go to Honeysuckle Creek station, you can actually see the park. There's a park that says where they broadcast the first signal before parks.
There you go. What's your deal, yeah. Michael? What? How do you know all this?
Well, I lived in Canberra. I was telling Leo, when I lived in Canberra, I thought it was very interesting to know about because I'm old enough to remember hearing the Monday morning on radio when they first landed on the Tranquility Base, and then saw it, you know, on the Monday afternoon on ABC with... As Reg Lindsay says, when the world all stopped to watch.
Yeah.
But it was just something I thought, well, while I was there, I could go and actually experience what this looked like firsthand. And there was the plaque that says, this is where we broadcasted from.
Yeah, and you don't really know that. The
dish, you know, there's always poetic license. Like, yeah. There never was that blackout they had for nearly 20 hours. That didn't occur. That didn't occur. But they did play cricket in the dish. Well, they never admitted it to it, but apparently they did do it. It's good to have you back on here. I'm glad you had a six-week break, because that's probably what you and Lee needed to really recharge the batteries.
Oh, mate, I don't know about that. But, yeah, look,
And Angela did a great job, because she had to get up at 4 o'clock to drive from where she lives into the new Lismore studios. Yeah,
exactly. Well, it's a different world Sunday morning, and you don't really do much on Saturday night, so weekends just change. But, yeah, look, I don't like taking long breaks because I get a bit lost, and I don't, you know, you can only
Maybe you need to have a July, August 10 days off sort of thing, a midwinter break. Then
sounds like a good idea, Michael.
Better talk to your boss.
Oh, yeah, I've got five of them.
other than Lee, I mean.
All right, mate, Michael, good on you. Nice to talk to you, mate.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, right now it's time for... This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and this morning it's live from America. Our correspondent, Kieran Kelly, I hope is on the line. Is that right, Kieran?
That's quite true, Anne, and thank you for the introduction with the cowbell.
Well, it's sort of a cowbell. I don't think it's a cowbell. It's something very similar. Kieran, there was a lot of things that I wanted to talk to you, and I realised that you've been overseas for quite a while. And we had a rate rise, and I know we always talk to you when there's a rate rise, but I remember last time I spoke to you, I think when there was no rate rise, I think, and you said, well, I think there probably should have been a rate rise because it's staggered and it's probably a bit late, and so this would be even later. What's your reaction to the rate rise the other day?
I totally agree. This is even worse. The rates went up a quarter of 1%. I went to lunch with Paul Keating when he was in his prime, and he was addressing a group of us investment managers, and he introduced me to a thing called the announcement effect. And his idea, if you want to stop inflation, you blast it out of the society, and you don't do it by easing interest rates up by a quarter of a percent. You make something that will shock the public, and you give it to them right between the eyes. This is Paul Keating, remember?
Mm.
So he, in a situation like this, what we're going to get is a quarter of a percent now and a quarter of a percent probably mid-year and a quarter of a percent later, when what you're really trying to do is change people's behaviour, stop them spending, stop the government spending, stop people borrowing money and spending. And to do that, you need what he called the announcement effect. So give them 1% straight up front and tell people, this is serious. We've got a real problem here with continued budget deficits, with inflation that hurts the economy, with too much debt. You've got to wake people up to the fact that this is really serious, and a quarter of a percent isn't going to get you there, I'm sorry.
But they don't seem, you know, a half a percent or a 1% rise in the interest is just something of other eras back in Adam Smith's time. They just don't do it. And you know, I just think the same thing. And I think 0.25%, is there something, is there a problem or isn't there? And if there is a problem, yes, bang, make it at 1%.
Yeah. It might drive the economy into recession, but there's been this continual build-up of debt to the point where the bill on the interest bill this year on the national debt will be about $27 billion. Thank you very much. That's about $1,000 per head for every person in Australia. The governments, a series of governments, have borrowed that. Did they ever ask the Australian public whether they wanted the interest bill on the debt to get that high? And we will probably, by about mid-year this year, the total debt Australia-wide will be about $1 trillion. That's the 1,000 billion. Not 1,000 million, 1,000 billion. And you only have to go back to the Howard Costello years, just after the turn of the century, that's only about 25 years ago, when the national debt was zero. That's 0%, and we paid no interest. I'm terrified that what's going to happen unless the public is, awakened to the danger, that we're going to have to start borrowing as a country just to pay the interest bill on the debt we've already got. So, and the other thing that bothers me, the government seems to have become unaccountable. So the current administration's added about, on my figures, about $90 billion to the debt pile. Well, then they walk away. And the people that are going to suffer are the people that are coming up behind you and I. This is the people that are probably 30 to 50, that they're paying a lot of income tax, and they've got to support themselves, and they've got to pay off this massive debt that they didn't accumulate. Their parents and grandparents accumulated and then shoveled it down to them. It's like what they call in rugby league a hospital pass. Do I have to explain what that is?
No, you don't have to explain what that is. I've had a few of those in my time.
My generation, and I'm as guilty as probably anyone, have given the younger generation, my children and grandchildren, a big hospital pass. And I don't know. Well, there are various solutions, Ian, and, you know, I'm not going to be telling your listeners anything new, but, you know, if we've got to get these budgets back to surplus. That means lowering spending, a change to the taxation regime. Do you know that the Australian economy relies for income tax about 25%? 25% of the total revenue comes from income tax. The OECD's average is about 15%. So we've got to get away from, I think, pure income taxes, maybe a few wealth taxes, wind back the capital gains tax exemptions and stop some of the rorts. I mean, the rorts that go on in Sydney and Melbourne in the housing market make me weep. So a person can buy a house for $20 million, sit on it for 10 years and sell it for $40 million and make a $20 million capital gains tax-free gain. How can that be just? We're talking about justice here, from an older generation to a younger generation. Probably we not only need surplus budgets, they need asset sales, but there's nothing left to sell. The government doesn't own anything anymore other than the NBN, and no one wants that anyway. I think reducing the capital gains tax discount, and I can't believe that the generation coming up after us won't start talking about death duties.
Now you talk about appetite. You know, you talk about interest rate and what Mr. Keating said, and that was all those years ago. What's that? 25 years ago, he said that, or 30 years ago?
25 years ago, yeah.
But there's appetite for that. Governments aren't, you know, because they'll lose. You know, you put the and the governments will go out. So the mantra of the government is any government, you know, we don't care what we do, we just got to stay in power. That's the thing. So there's no appetite for that. So you can imagine it would hit the fan if they said, Ms. Bullock has put the rates up 1% and we're going to put them up 1% next year if the things don't happen. So there's no appetite for it.
It's got to hit the fan. Don't you remember the recession we had to have?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay, well, what Paul Keating was very good at, I think, is stepping back, looking at the big picture and saying, I'm going to do the right thing here. I'm going to shock the pants off everybody. And we've got to get stuck into this because we're going to be a problem. And he called it a banana republic. And he had the guts to do it. He was an unusual personality. John Howard did it sort of in a different sort of way. He wasn't quite as blunt. But we need a singular individual that comes along and says, I don't care if this costs me power. I love Australia, and I don't want to oppress younger generations coming up, and younger generations should have a fair go. This is a country that's about a fair go. And we see these current governments, why they won't do anything is because they're not held accountable. You know, they'll run up all this debt, leave the country in a precarious situation, and then say, okay, see you later. I'm off to be head of the UN, or I'm off to do something else. The lack of accountability just makes me weep, and I think it's profoundly unfair. Anyway.
And did you mention to me the Ferguson rule? What was the Ferguson rule?
The Ferguson rule, or the named after Neil Ferguson, is where a country, and we, unfortunately, Australia hit this year, it's where a country spends, it's got so much debt that it ends up paying more on interest than it does on defence. And while we've reached that point, unfortunately, so has the United States. But I got in a big argument last night with a guy who I think used to be in the CIA. He quoted me
that's clever.
Ferguson rule.
Right,
yeah, no, he quoted me the Ferguson rule. And anyway, I said, well, look, I hate to tell you this, Butch, but the US hit the Ferguson line this year as well. So their debt has got so big. I mean, they spent a lot on defence, but they're now heading to the point where they're going to be spending more on interest than they do on defence. And he jumped across the table. I thought he was going to throttle me. And he said, yeah, but we've got to pay for our own defence as well as yours and Western Europe's and everybody else that won't carry the can. And we're sick of it. No wonder we've got such a huge interest bill. So he went close to choking me, but he didn't succeed.
Kieran, as I wander around, I just think that the value of our money has just gone out the window. When we did economics, there was a thing that where you discussed inflation, you found out with a basket of commodities that they looked at the price of these things, and that's how you worked out the inflation rate. But everywhere I go, and every little commodity to buy a lettuce, a cucumber, a cake, a cup of coffee, whatever, an oil filter or an air filter for the car or whatever, they seem to have gone up. You know, some of them gone up 20, 30, 40%. You know, you're paying $35 for something and now it's $65. I mean, the value of money, it seems to me our money has no value. And so to put up an interest rate by a quarter of 1% seems just ludicrous to me. If there is a problem, you know, as you say, you know, call it a banana public or say whatever, come out and say something outlandish. But there needs to be some, you know, just for ordinary people travelling around, their money doesn't buy nearly as much now. Price of meat, all the foodstuffs, things which used to be cheap are now quite expensive, and that's what people spend most of their money on.
Yes, that's right. I agree with you. I haven't looked at the basket of things that constitutes the CPI for quite a while. I suspect it's become unrepresentative because anybody that's gone into a supermarket will tell you that the price of goods in supermarkets has gone up a lot. And the thing that strikes me, and it strikes my family living here because they all came home for Christmas to Australia, that the United States is now a cheaper place to live than Australia. And something's gone terribly wrong in Australia, either with the calculation of the CPI, a reluctance to do anything about budget reform, a failure to reduce personal income tax and have a broader base tax that incorporates wealth. So I agree with you. I have to go away and look, and I don't know why, but anecdotally, I agree with you. There's a gap between the reported CPI figure and what people pay in the shops.
Kieran, I'm talking to Kieran Kelly, who I often talk to on the program now and again. Kieran, you're in America. Now, I've been looking at the temperature in New York, for instance, and Chicago, especially in New York. I think it's about minus 17 minimum minus 4 maximum. I mean, it's really cold there. Now, where are you?
I'm in Utah in the Wasatch Mountains, and I'm sitting in the sun, sunbaking, on a veranda that would normally have 4 feet of snow on it. If you reckon Australia does droughts, Ian, you should come here. They've got a drought here that would curl your hair. I'm sitting out looking at a range of mountains that do not have a drop of snow on them, nothing. And normally what happens here in January, February, there's about 4 foot of snow on the lawns here. And, of course, the animals, the elk, the moose, the deer, they go down into the valleys where there's no snow so they can graze. I'm looking at a herd of deer grazing on our front lawn. They're grazing here, and there's deer and elk up on the neighbour's front lawn. You can't normally see front lawn here. And this place is waking up to the fact that they're going to have a shocking, shocking summer because there's been no precipitation. And America's so different than Australia. We have a fire regime that we've been used to all our lives. We have volunteer bushfire brigades. We have a whole infrastructure about understanding fire. All the houses that surround me here are all built of timber, and they have trees growing right up to the eaves. And now this whole area cannot be insured for fire. My children's house, they can't get housing insurance, and right through this valley, no insurance company will touch them because they've suddenly woken up to the fire risk in America, and it's dire. The only way I could describe it, if I could make it an Australian example, is if you were in Darwin, and you know the pattern as well as I do, you get a build-up in November, it gets very stinking hot, and then it usually breaks in December, the rains start, and it rains in January, it rains in February, it rains in March, and then it starts to cool down, the rain stops, and you go into a dry season. This would be the equivalent in Darwin of not having a build-up, coming out of the dry season, the temperatures stay cool, you get to December, and people are sitting around in Darwin with a jumper on, eating their Christmas lunch. There's been no rain. Seriously, this is how bad it is. Yeah. There's been no rain in Darwin. They go into January and February when you would expect it to be
monsoon
down.
Yeah, monsoon.
Yeah. Monsoon, and, you know, you get the umbrella out. There's no rain. And then you get to the end of February when normally it would be the rains would stop and it'd start to get cool again. And you've gone from a wet season right through what is supposedly a wet, humid period back into the next dry season, but you haven't had any of the wet, humid period in between. It's summer here.
Mm. And this is in the middle of winter. And Utah's generally, I don't know much about the climate in various states. I sort of do, but Utah, I know, is very cold in the winter.
Very cold. I've been here when it's minus 25, for example. I think that the coldest I've skied in here is about minus 28. It's 10 degrees where I'm sitting, 10 degrees plus. I'm sitting here in the sun without a shirt on. I went for a hike this morning up in the mountains. You can't hike here in January. It's too cold and it's covered in snow. I walked past the golf course, right?
Yeah.
This is the middle of January. There's normally 6 feet of snow on the fairways, and they use it for cross-country skiing. You ski around the golf course. Well, they're all out there having 18 holes.
And now they're worried. And they're worried about the fire in summer, which is coming up.
Yeah, because there's no water. Mm. There's been no snow, so there's no water, and people and I went to a special ceremony last night for the opening of the Olympics because I'm in a big ski town here. And for the first time I heard, and all the locals are worried about it, the 2032 Olympic Games are going to be held here, and there's a murmur starting to go around that the IOC is having second thoughts about Salt Lake City and Park City because they're worried there won't be any snow. For example, the Olympic Games have started in Milan. If they'd been here, they wouldn't have been able to hold them. If they'd been anywhere in Western America.
But has this just happened this year, or has this been of recent times that this has happened last year or the year before or what?
Look, last year was pretty bad. Mm. I think it's been getting worse and worse. This has set a record. This is the worst year since in 50 years, and they started keeping records 50 years ago. This is the lowest precipitation, they call it, they've had, and it's destroying the businesses. There's no tourists. There's nobody on the mountain because you can't do anything. Mm. And all the restaurants are empty. The clothing stores have still got all their 2026 stock. I've never seen a more miserable group of people in my life. And I like to walk around the shops and ask the people, you know, how are you
and
going?
And get into arguments by the sound of things, yeah?
Sometimes, only with people from the CIA. Or he's just retired, and I'm sure he's in the CIA.
Karen, it's great to talk this morning. Listen, I just wanted to say one thing. Oh, you've been away, but you obviously know about shark attacks and what's happened of recent times, in especially around here, Northern Beaches, and terrible things that have happened. And I know what you're, you know, I often quote you about dusky whalers, and you said you saw your way to the dusky whalers as you swim past and things like that. But my thing, when I grew up, though, I was told never to swim in the Georges River. You just don't do that, you know. But people now are doing all those silly things, you know. It just seems to me, you know, we need to have another, you know, education program. Don't swim where, you know, the surf beaches can be dangerous, so you just don't jump in, rips and all those sort of things. And you don't swim in unpatrolled waters.
Although, take a step backwards. Mm. We don't have a shark problem, I don't think. We have a bull shark problem. Now, there's always been bull sharks in the harbour. And why have they started to attack people all of a sudden? That's the question I would like scientists to ask. Now, I've heard several scientists explain the bull shark's an unusual creature because it likes to breed in brackish or fresh water.
This is like the bronze whalers. We call the bronze whalers, but we call them bull sharks now. Is that right?
No, I don't think so. I think the bronze whale is a completely different species, but I'm not a scientist. I don't know. But I know that at Balmoral, where I've swum a lot, and there's a bull shark sort of trench that goes up under the Spit Bridge, so there's been bull sharks there for years. And now they've started to attack people. And I've heard all sorts of suggestions, whether it's because the water's getting more turbid and they get confused. I've heard that it's because water's heating up. There's no doubt the water around Sydney's starting to heat up. We've got coral starting to grow around the sanctuary at Manly for the first time. I don't think it's ever been seen there before. So who knows why bull sharks have suddenly become so predatory? I don't know, and I'm not going to offer an answer. But I can tell you that there's been bull sharks in the harbour and certainly out on the beaches for many, many years, and was it because we got a sudden heavy downfall of rain? But we've had sudden heavy downfalls of rain before, and it hasn't been a problem.
Mm.
But bull sharks are obviously a problem now, and I don't know why specifically them. We're not getting great whites and tiger sharks tearing people to pieces off Sydney. It's bull sharks. So it's a problem. I'm not going to argue that it isn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a conservationist for all forms of wildlife, including sharks.
All right.
But we don't want people killed either, do we?
Great to talk to you, Kieran. Good on you. I've got Peter Joseph on the line. He's on his way to Bondi for the ocean swim. So I'll cut to him.
Give him my regards.
I will do. Good on you,
Kieran. Give him my regards.
Good on you, Kieran.
Okay.
See you, mate.
Righto, bye.
Bye. Isn't he interesting? Peter Joseph, good morning.
Yeah. Good morning, Becca. And Kieran should be on his way to Bondi as well.
I know, but he's in Utah where there's no snow. So there's a big ocean swim on today at Bondi?
Yeah, it's the North Bondi Ocean Swim Classic, which is on every year. And as Kieran's been talking about the sharks, the Palmer Whale 3 weeks ago was cancelled because of the sharks. Cold Classic was postponed at Manly because of the sharks. The Murray Rose swim's been cancelled. This one is on. And Kieran, we can thank, because he's undoubtedly given the day off, so we'll be all okay.
All right, Pete. Good on you, mate. Thank you. So that's today at Bondi Beach. Good on you, Peter. I've got to fly, but nice to talk to you, mate.
Bye.
See you. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Hi, Macca.
Yep.
Oh, this is Wendy from Stanley in Victoria.
All right, not Stanley and Taz, but Stanley and Victoria.
No,
right.
No, a lot of people get confused.
No, I'm not confused.
I'm ringing up about an observation that I've made, and I'm interested in wondering whether anyone else has noticed it as well, especially if they grow their own vegetables.
Yep.
A couple of years ago, I was talking to some farmers that grew pumpkins for pumpkin seed. And they had their pumpkins, but their pumpkins didn't have any seed in them.
Right.
And then last season I had pumpkins and zucchinis that grew and lasted for months and months and months, but they actually had no seeds in them when I cut them open. And I bought a watermelon lately, and of course they've produced them with no seeds now.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if there's a bit of a flow on there that the bees are spreading those little genetics around to other foods, and wondering about what the consequences will be.
Well, what are you saying? You think it's companies doing that, or?
Well, I think it's been bred into things to meet demand. You know, people don't like dealing with seeds, but seeds also produce the next generation. So I'm a bit worried about the future of the next generation with a lot of things we grow.
And what do you think the role of bees is? What are you saying?
Well, the bees are the pollinators, but I haven't seen many bees this year either.
No, well, it depends where you are, of course, and there's been the varroa mite, but the bees are back at my place because I've got a couple of lovely Ficae or Ficifolias out, a pink one and a red one, and it's full of bees and lorikeets and parrots and flying foxes and ants, and so they're all in there.
Yeah, that's all good.
And the bees are back, but... But, yeah, maybe so we used to talk to a group of people called at the Seed Savers Network, and I think it was Southern Queensland or Northern New South Wales, and they had a whole lot of varieties of old vegetables.
Yeah, your heritage varieties.
And which were quite nice. But, look, I don't know. And then some the companies that make, deal with and sell seeds and things like that and vegetables, don't they have copyright on them?
That's quite often in things. It's not always that obvious. I know I've bought strawberries and it said in the small print that they didn't put out runners, so they're just they're a terminal plant. They're not going to produce anymore. And alyssum at one point. I thought, I'll get some alyssum. They make a really good border. And then read the label and it said they don't multiply any longer. So I'm wondering, I think diversity is the essence of survival.
Exactly.
And if there's too much that's put in one basket, it can fall in a big heap. I've seen that happen too many times in my life.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Somebody will know about this, I suspect. And I would hope there's somebody around who's got... Because I used to like the old versions of watermelons better. They seem to taste a bit, the seedless ones. But you have to spit the seeds out. But that was a good fun, actually, when you were a kid.
Yeah. I actually had a... now I've forgotten what I was going to say.
No.
It was about, I know, I was eating, because I've been growing my vegetables for the last 50 years. When carrots go to seed, I'd start eating them. And then I began to think, wonder if these things that go to seed have a toxic, they get a bitter taste. And I thought, oh, are they toxic, are they healthy to eat or are they healthy to give to my animals? And I did a bit of research and remember broccoli used to taste really horrible unless you cooked it properly?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's the bittering, the natural bittering that plants have to protect them from predators and so they can go to seed and reproduce. And I read that it was being bred out or selectively chosen not to have the plants with the bitter taste. But then, of course, the insects love them, don't they?
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. We went through this classic where my mate said, he said, on the bull tomatoes. I said, what are bull tomatoes? He said, well, they're so hard and they're bred to travel. And, that's the whole deal with all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And strawberries, we did the thing about strawberries because don't think I've tasted nice strawberries for a year or two now. And they seem to have lost the taste because they've got to travel because the best time to eat a strawberry is the day it's come out or, the next day or two. But, we got them for, a week or two later because they've got to travel them around the place. I don't know. Wendy, it's very... It's very troubling. But I was just thinking the other day, because we were talking earlier to Kieran, I don't know if you heard Kieran, but we were talking about the cost of living and money and things like that. And I had both grandparents had a garden in the backyard, and it was full of stuff. They grew rhubarb and spinach and carrots and potatoes, and they had quince trees, and of course they didn't have any dough, and nobody did. Mm-hmm. And I'm mm-hmm. thinking maybe we should be doing that again, because if you go mm-hmm. and start buying all this greenery, except for kale, of course, which is a weed, but you spend money on lettuce and things like that in a supermarket or in a shop, and it costs you a fortune. So maybe, but people That's don't right. have backyards anymore, do they?
No. We're all, I can remember actually when, I think it was probably late 80s, early 90s, when they decided to turn us into a consumer society.
Yeah.
And I thought that's the beginning of the end. I'm a bit of a doom and gloom person, because I can see so much that isn't looking promising. You've got floods and famine. We're in a drought here at the moment. We're in a rainforest environment, which has had less than 50% of its, or about 50% of its rainfall this year.
Yeah, well.
That builds up. Year after year.
And none of us have got time. I'd love to, because I think it's lovely, but it really is. It's very expensive. You go into the supermarket and start buying lettuce and all those things and tomatoes and stuff and plums and stuff. They're huge. I mean, this is what I worried about, but I think about the, you know, inflation. It says, oh, it's 3%. That's nonsense. Everything's gone up to hell. Hell, and our money's not worth the paper it's printed on, or the plastic it's printed on. That's what I reckon.
I think when we learned home economics at school,
as my mother. My mother taught it. Yeah, go on.
We were taught there was a breakdown of your budget, and it was 30% of something. 30% for your rent, 30% for your food, and I don't know what the other bit was, 30% tax, I don't know, to live off. But, you know, it's gone way out of that. I don't know how people can survive. Well, I really don't. No. I don't.
But that's what I think. If you had your you've got to have a grandfather who's growing all that stuff. He's growing his sabagos and his Pontiacs, and he's growing his spinach and the rhubarb and the whole deal. But you haven't got that anymore. So, and people haven't got backyards. So
it's, no, well, I know.
It's doom and gloom. It's... Wendy, keep smiling. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks.
See ya. Bye. I'm out of breath. You know our number. G'day, this is Macca.
Good morning, Macca. John calling you from Budrum on the Sunshine Coast.
Yes, Johnny.
Mate, just giving you a call. I've been listening for yonks, but just first time I've rung you. Regarding your top 10 from last Sunday, your choice of the French version of Waltzing Matilda was the best song you've played in a long, long time, I think, anyway.
An inspired choice, you're saying, John? Is that right?
Yes, very much so, mate. I think I'll look at the song Waltzing Matilda from now on in a completely different view sort of thing, you know.
I'd like the I think it'd be because, you know, kids at uni and at school now are using AI to pass their exams and things like that, especially at uni. I thought, you should have vivas, like a oral test. So they should have oral tests. And I thought a great test for French would be to play the French version of Waltzing Matilda and sort of translate it, as you say. Well, he said, because I'd like to get a translation of that, because you'd need to listen to it fairly carefully. It was sort of wistful and sad in a lot of ways. And that's why I played it, because for little Matilda, who was tragically murdered by those awful bastards, and it sort of had a wistful feel about it. That's why I played that. There's lots of versions of Waltzing Matilda, but I thought that sort of matched the mood that I was in and that I felt after all that horribleness.
I think a lot of us felt exactly the same way, Macca. It was just wonderful to sit and listen to it, and just sit and listen. And I enjoyed the truckie that rang earlier, that I think he was shifting grapes out in Narendra way.
The people out there getting it done.
Mate, exactly, like the guys paddling. I'm a bit with you. I'd be sitting in the back just chatting merrily away. I wouldn't be up the front trying to paddle. No. You're a little motor. Have a little motor on it, I guess.
Yes, it's nice to listen to what people talk about, and And, you know, they tell you all sorts of things. National Servicemen's Day is next Saturday, the 14th. And I remember when I was at primary school, I had a couple of young blokes taught us, and I think they were just out of national service. I think they were probably only 18 or 19. It was in primary school. It's only 18 or 19, I'd say they were. But they were national service on the first lot, and then there was the Vietnam lot, which was, what, 65 to 72 or 3 or something.
Yeah, thereabouts. But no. And, mate, look, thank you very much for your program. We learn so much every Sunday that we don't know anything else about in this country now.
Yeah. All right. Good on you. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you, and all the best to you, Lee, and the team.
Thanks, mate.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, great to talk to you. I just listening to your friend Kieran in Utah. Very interesting guy to listen to, and I don't know who he is, but I just had some compassion for you. We recently went to Atlanta to visit family, in fact, my sister-in-law, and they had quite a big house, and the air conditioning was on. And I said to him when we went out for the day, I said, why don't you turn the air conditioner off for the whole house is air conditioned? And they said, oh, it doesn't really matter. It's only $30 a month anyway.
Well, so
listening to Kieran saying how cheap it is, correspondingly, we went out to a show in New York, went to MJ, Michael Jackson. On the way home, we had a nightcap. So I had a nightcap and my wife had a soda water. It was $38.
And when was this?
Oh, recently, in the last 3 months.
Well, you said you went to a Michael Jackson show. Was that a film or something? What?
Yeah, MJ on Broadway, so a musical.
Oh, right, and the musical. Yeah, right, I'm with you now. Yeah,
so
well,
drink on the way.
New York's very dear, I suppose, but he seems to think that things are cheaper in America than they are in Australia. But I think we're one of the... I can't see there's anywhere that's going to be much dearer than... cost of living here. We got money, but we've got everything costs a bomb, Ian.
Well, you're right, yeah. Hey, and then another interesting thing, we lived in Vanuatu for quite a while, and I remember listening to you over there because you only got the ABC TV for 2 hours and then you could listen to a Macro on Sunday. And I remember sitting in my balcony going, I'm going to go for a surf, and there's a guy, you were talking to a guy called Major Mex Chernez. And he was giving you a surf report from Vanuatu, and I'm going, oh, man, don't tell everyone about the surf in Vanuatu. We don't want everyone coming over here. So, yeah.
What about the Noahs over there? Do they have them over there?
I swim every morning. I'm on the Gold Coast. I swim every morning or go for surf every morning. And honestly, I've been doing it for a long time, and I've only ever seen, touch wood, a couple of leopard sharks.
That's what on the Gold Coast.
Yeah,
but what about in Vanuatu? Do they have them over there?
Only reef sharks. I've never seen anything other than a reef shark and lots of fish. Yeah.
Well, someone will come up with a. Kieran was postulating, maybe it's just bull sharks are the problem, and what do we do? And maybe you know, but I never. When I hear. You know, people have done studies into things and you get all sorts of stuff. You never know, really, Ian. People have got their – everybody's got their own agenda when they it comes to telling you what's going on, you know. So,
that's right.
So you've got to try you got to try and sort the wheat from the chaff, don't you?
Yeah, that's right.
I think what we should do is we should ask AI.
Oh.
It's a joke, Ian. I'm being funny.
All right, mate.
Good on you, Ian. Nice to talk to you. But, so electricity over there is a lot cheaper than here, eh?
Unbelievable. $30 a month, you know. It's just ridiculous.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I don't have air conditioning because you can't afford it. I mean, I just somehow think somebody's making money out of charging a lot for electricity and we're not making it. So I think, well, bugger them, I'll just do without, you know. And I don't live in a place where that's hot. I mean, we have hot days, but, you know, you get over it. You just try and do that. But it just seems like the price of it, ever since it was privatised, I think it's gone through the, you know, it's just...
Through the roof, yeah. And the problem is some of our money's going somewhere overseas, you know.
Yeah, and somebody's making money and the rest of us aren't. But anyway, nice to talk to you. You're going for a surf this morning, Ian, are you?
No, No, actually, I'm going for my assessment. I've recently, well, not recently, retired 6 years ago, and I'm just doing my assessment today for the surf rescue wave runner on the Gold Coast. So I'm going to be on the jet skis.
Oh, wow. Good on you. That must be fun. Is that fun?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're pretty visible, so the idea is not to have too much fun, but to keep an eye on the swimmers.
Yeah, exactly. And the sharks. Mm. Let's not forget
too many
the sharks.
Too many do-gooders in high-rises, mate.
All right. Good on you, Ian. Great to talk to you, mate.
All right. You too.
See ya. Yeah. Bye. Drew's in Ballarat. Good morning, Drew.
Morning, Macca. How are you, mate?
Oh, not bad, you know.
That's
you know what I'd like to be doing now? Either what my first caller this morning said, sitting by a river, by the Delatite River.
Would be nice.
Or having a lovely breakfast with some friends and talking and having bacon and eggs and stuff like that. That's what I'd like to be doing.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be talking to me, mate.
Yeah, I'm enjoying that too, Drewy.
Yeah. Very good. I was just calling in regards to the call about the pumpkins and not getting too much seed.
Yeah.
Don't fear. It's probably pretty unlikely that it's from crossbreeding and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
With plants, like any sort of thing, it's alive and they go through stresses. So if it's really hot or really dry, sometimes they can just have a bad go of it and fail to produce the seed. A lot of your self-pollinating stuff. If there's no wind to sort of shake the flower and get it going, it'll still have a poor pollination and either not produce seed or produce bad fruit and that sort of stuff. So
what you're saying is have faith. Have faith,
yes,
Drew.
Have faith, absolutely. Well, we're not breeding veggies out of existence.
No, well, that's good. Well, well, so you hear stories about, you know, was it those big companies that were just doing all that sort of stuff, and you can buy their plants, but they don't have seeds, and they don't all that sort of stuff, and
I mean it does happen, and you have to remember out in those paddocks, the pumpkin they got produced seed, so for them not to produce seed, if it was a crossbreeding thing, those pumpkins that they have would produce seed, and they'd be crossed, and then their seedlings are the ones that wouldn't produce seed.
All right.
Like, because their seeds are just the plant's little babies.
Drew,
cross the genetics.
Drew, you did horticulture, did you?
Yep, correct, Amundo.
And what do you do now for a gig?
I just work at a garden.
Uh-huh.
Grow azaleas and camellias and begonias and that sort of stuff, so.
Not veggies and things?
No, I do grow a lot of vegetables, though, at home.
Yeah.
Grew up on a vineyard, so been around it my whole life.
And that's the thing, isn't it? You know, you long for the old days when your grandfather give you a big bunch, he said, take these home to your mother. And he'd give you a big bunch of carrots and a big bag of spuds or something like that. And
absolutely.
And then your grandma would give you... she had a quince. She'd say, look, here's some stewed quinces. Take these home. And I used to hate it. And of course, quinces now are like gold. They're like, we're having quince. It's just the flavor of the month. It's like Ninja Turtles. It's just, it's quinces.
Yeah, I'm lucky. My grandfather's still around. His thing's apricots. So I go home to South Australia to visit him and I get a bucket and end up feeding them to sheep and all sorts because I've got them coming out of my ears.
Oh, they're lovely dried apricots, and then you make we bought some apricots when we were doing an OB in South Australia somewhere, and they were dried and I brought them home, gave them to my sister, and she made some apricot jam. Well, God help me.
Yum, yum, yum.
Oh, could have died. I kept it for 6 months and it seemed to get better. I don't know. It seemed to get better. Seemed to be like a good wine. Yeah, the apricot. I'm a fool for wine. Good on you, Drew. Thanks, mate.
All good. Thanks for watering.
Okay. See ya. Bye. Have a listen to this, kids.
We found this lovely house.
Where?
Just a little way from town.
Oh, good on you.
We bought a beachside unit.
We're travelling right around on the Wallaby.
It's our home among the gum trees, and if you've got the time, I'll tell you why I live where I live. I'll tell you why I live where I live.
In this Oz of ours, it's been hot and wet and dry, depending where you are. Eldert Hobie says to me, Macca, Australia truly lives up to its summer reputation, while the north and the east is copping a drenching. Isn't that a great word, drenching? Adelaide total for January was zero. Hope some of the waters will flow down into the Murray. And he sent a photo of my Kelpie girl blending into the dry local landscape. Fantastic, Eldert. Lovely photo. Lovely Kelpie. I'll try and put it up. But we all live in different ways. This is from Jude and Judd. Judd and Jude, Jude and Judd. Jude says, good morning, Macca. We left the city of Perth and bought a little farm, about 14 and a half acres. It had no electricity, no hot and cold running water in the house, no hot or cold running water in the bathroom, no kitchen sink. Our shower was outside, bolted onto a bush pole with no walls or ceiling. We had to light a fire inside the house to get hot water, which took about 3 hours to heat up. I counted 388 days with no electricity. We started with a little tilly lamp. You know what a tilly lamp is. I walked a couple of times thinking, I can't do this. Judd would drive up, that's the other half. He'd drive up the track and come and find me and say, come on, we can do this. This September will be 8 years with no TV. Quel dommage. We have electricity now. We have solar panels on the roof and a battery room. All our lights are LED, which run off a car battery. We have a roof on our shower now because Judd was having a shower and there was a lightning storm. It's pretty funny. It took me about 3 days to be brave enough to have a shower under the stars, lightning, hail, or thunderstorms. I know the ABC radio off by heart, and she got a little hard after off by heart. You are all we have. Oh, so sad. News on the hour and every half hour. I don't know what to say. Sometimes I hide the batteries for our little radio. The cricket season's just finished, so until the footy starts, I'm allowed to have music, Macca. Or is that I'm allowed to have music, Macca? We love listening to you on a Sunday morning. Love, Jude and Judd, who've had 8 years. 8 years with no TV. They'll need counselling. It's going to be a bit late. See, they've missed all those great shows like I'm a Bachelor, Let Me Out of Here, or Cooking with the Celebrities, or all those. Look, they've missed all that. Anyway, from Chris Morris, he says, my name is Chris Morris. I'm 69 years old and I live in Santa Barbara, California. I grew up in South Australia and as a 10-year-old moved from Adelaide to Woomera after my father, who worked for the Department of Defence, took up a position there. I spent perhaps the best 8 years of my life growing up in the town and forming lasting friendships and unforgettable memories. When I was in high school, I had my first girlfriend, Joanne, who was the daughter of a US Air Force Master Sergeant stationed at Narunga Tracking Station near Island Lagoon. Been there. We dated for 18 months before her dad was transferred back to the States. I found myself living alone in Northcote some 46 years later and decided I would see just how hard it would be to find Joanne using the internet. I mean, how hard could it be? There's only 350 million people living in the United States. Surely a Google image search would do it. Well, as crazy as it seems, it was that easy. And within a month, I had hopped on a plane and gone over to see her. 3 months later, I arrived back in Santa Barbara right at the time of COVID, and we found ourselves quarantined in her apartment. You hear a lot about the pressure that COVID put on relationships during the lockdown, but I'm pleased to say that we decided to go the other way and we got married. This was a feat in itself, as all government offices were closed, but we heard that they were doing government-run marriage services out of a car park in Anaheim. So with all our marriage documents in hand, we drove 3 hours down from Santa Barbara, got married by a celebrant who sat in one of the toll booths behind a glass shield and used the speaker microphone to conduct the service. We then had 3 minutes to take some pics before we had to return to our car and leave as the next couple arrived for their service. See, marriage is still popular, apparently. I listen to you most Saturday mornings, or is that Saturday Arvos, I think? We're on the other side of the dateline, and I love it. So that's why I live where I live, and I must say that if I have to live outside of Australia, Santa Barbara is truly a sweet spot in the universe. The reason I decided to write, Macca, and tell you this story is because of a recent article that appeared in the Montecito Journal about the eucalyptus trees in the area. As I was reading this article, I couldn't help thinking of you and the show, and all the people that call in. Says Chris in Santa Barbara, if you'd like to write to Why I Live Where I Live, I'd love to see it. Maybe you'll even win a prize. Maybe we'll start some prizes for great letters, because great letters are just that. Post Office Box 9994, Sydney 2001. You can send an email or whatever. Send it by the Pony Express. Do you remember that song by Billy? It's been a while since you left. I should play it. What a good song. If you'd like to write to Why I Live Where I Live, Post Office Box 9994, Sydney 2001, or the usual other ways that people get missives to other people. And that's Why I Live Where I Live for this week. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. This is Damon. I'm a paramedic on the Mid-North Coast. How are you?
Good, thanks, Damon.
Hey, I just wanted to add a few things to what the professor said about the shark bite kits. We paramedics in New South Wales do carry artery forceps, but in an injury like a shark bite, they're not practical to stop major hemorrhage.
Yeah.
In theatres, they're great. You usually know which artery you've nicked.
Mm.
With a shark bite, you just need to stop the massive bleeding, which a tourniquet is great at doing.
Mm.
The other thing is, in the shark bite kits, he was a bit dismissive of the space blankets, which keep the patient warm. It's vitally important with a shark attack to keep the patient warm, as it's with a drop in body temperature, it affects the coagulation of the natural coagulation pathway of the body.
I think the good prof is an interesting fella. And he wasn't there to talk about it, but they were talking about trauma. And he says, well, I can tell you, we've had shark attacks in Australia. And I think they were a bit dismissive because, you know, to keep them warm and they wanted to stop the blood flow. But, yeah, I know as soon as you have a trauma like that, you can go freezing cold, can't you, for all sorts of trauma. And all of a sudden your body temperature goes whooshka.
And the problem with that is you're not forming clots when your body temperature drops.
No.
That was all. I just wanted to add that just so that if anyone does come across a shark attack with a shark bite kit, once you've applied the tourniquet, wrap them up, wait for paramedics.
Yeah, Damon, I've not seen a shark. Because of the number of attacks that's been lately, you think about it, and I think there can't be many worse things than a shark ripping into your legs. I mean, you just make the best of a bad situation when you're in your job, don't you? I mean, gee, look, it's
That's
a terrible.
All you can do.
And when you look at the mouth of one of those big sharks, my God, it's built for cutting, isn't it? It's just unbelievable, unbelievable things. Yeah. Damon, how long have you been a para?
Only 6 years.
Uh huh. How are you finding it?
I love it. Yeah, it's a great job. Something different every day. Stressful at times, but
you're helping people. That's the main thing. You get that, and you get that feeling. I bet every day, and I'm sure people and families of victims help tell you that.
Yeah, for the most part, it's great. Very rewarding.
All right, mate. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for that. You should go to to the next trauma conference. Where was he? In Japan, wasn't he? I think.
Rizutsu, yeah.
He said they were mostly
a very popular tax write off.
Yes, exactly. But he said they were mostly from Victoria.
Yeah.
He said they're from all over the world, but there's lots of Victorian doctors there talking about.
It
all
does sound good there.
Yeah, it did sound good. You a skier, are you, Damon?
Snowboarder. Yeah.
Oh,
Japan's
wow.
On the list, so maybe if I could write some of it off.
no such luck for us. You should be in Italy, mate.
Oh, no.
Not that good.
Just a punter on the slopes.
Yeah, well, that's the main thing, mate. Good on you. Nice to talk to you, Damon.
Thanks, Macca. You too.
See you, mate. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Hello, this is Jennifer from Kings Langley.
Hi, Jennifer.
I was listening to that lovely song before about nobody wearing patches, and I was watching the floor, and I thought, I have to call you. I make my own patches. At the moment, I've got white three-quarter-length pants on with patches on the knees, little flowers, and I put them on my jeans or any other trousers that go at the knees, and I wear them quite proudly wherever I go. And people are amazed, oh, look at those lovely trousers. And I say, well, they're just hiding the holes.
Exactly. I've got shirts with on my elbows. They go on the elbows.
Yeah.
So I put patches on. My mum used to put patches on my elbows, and I still get get them, because I don't like to throw things out.
No, I'm the eldest of six kids from Country Victoria, Maryborough and Country Victoria, and I used to see my dad make overalls out of my mum's old woolen skirts on the old treadle sewing machine.
Uh-huh.
So you keep everything. I had old drapes because I changed to plantation shutters, and I make my shopping bags out of them. And people say, oh, what lovely shopping bags. Oh, they've just been made from drapes. You have to think, Macca, you have to think outside the square.
Well, you do, especially in this day and age.
See, you don't waste anything. I see the waste around, and you see sometimes on TV the piles of clothing going into rubbish. It's terrible. I can't handle it. I'm wearing clothes at least 15, 20 years old, and I don't care. I make my own fashion, and people always say how nice I look.
Yeah, well, I think, and it's different, and you're making your own statement too. That's the vive la différence. You don't, you know, the trauma of a woman who goes to a party or something, and the woman over the other side of the room is wearing the same dress or something like that.
If it won't happen with me.
Exactly. No. And it probably won't happen with me either, because I keep things that I bought 30 years ago because they're good, and sometimes they seem to be made out of better material for some reason. I don't know.
My dad was the same. We had to fight with him to get a new cardigan and whatever years ago. And I literally wear blue every day. I do wear white trousers with the blue shirt. I used to work at high schools, and the kids always knew me as Mrs. Blue. I wore blue. I wear blue every day, every night, every day, because you can't control much in your life. I can control what I eat and what I wear.
Well, you're
that's my statement.
You just told Australia, Jennifer. Good on you.
I could tell them lots. Believe me, give me a platform, and I could tell them heaps.
the song and was a poem, because we used to play the poem too. It's not just about patches on your jeans and stuff, but it is about that. But it's also patching up anything and broken, fixing up with the world, patching up relationships.
Yeah,
all that. Yeah. It was a catch-all of patches.
Yes, I understood that, and it's so true. That's how the world's deteriorating. There's nothing, not enough is being patched up.
No.
You know, recycling, saving things like others. I grow my own veggies. I just picked a big handful of snake beans this morning. I grow lots of stuff, and that's what my parents used to do back in Victoria as well.
A mate of mine said to me, he said, oh, we like to employ New Zealand panel beaters for cars, you know. And I said, why? He says, because they don't, you know, here in Australia, they just take the whole panel off and throw it all away. But the blokes from New Zealand will beat out the thing and duddly-dum and fix it up and patch it like it's good as new. So, but I don't know if you can do that anymore, not in Australia. The cost of labour and everything's everything's gone through the roof here. And you heard Kieran, I don't know if you heard Kieran this morning saying how things were cheaper in America, and another bloke's rung and said $30 a month for air conditioning. But here,
who wants to go there?
Oh, I wouldn't. I love it. I'd live in America in a heartbeat. I reckon it's the country of my youth and everything. It's Mickey Mouse and Coca-Cola and Crawdaddy and all the lovely music. Oh, mate, I'd go there in a heartbeat. I think America's a great and they've got a great national
days.
And they've got a oh no, it's still there. And it's got a,
I've got a cousin in St. Paul whose wife is from Costa Rica, and she's too scared to come back to her home in St. Paul because she is Costa Rican, and she's scared of being picked up by ICE. So it affects me because of my family.
Is she illegal? Is she?
No, she's been there 20 years and she's got a green card.
She got a green card.
Well, legally allowed to be there.
Well, she wouldn't be touched, would she?
Well, she's just scared because of whatever's happening over there.
Mm. I like America. I always liked it. I like Americans mostly. I mean, there's good and bad everywhere, but it's just I love their national anthem, and I love their you know their days where they celebrate Thanksgiving. I mean, I think we should have a Thanksgiving Day everywhere, and certainly in Australia, to be grateful for what we have. But
yeah, just thanks for being able to put something on the plate, I think, these days.
Exactly, exactly. Jen, it's been great to...
darling, my dad used to listen to you. I first heard you in 1993 when I was down in Maryborough, and I said, what is that man? It was Macca.
1953, I feel.
No, 1993.
I know I said that, but people say that. How long have you been there, Macca? But I used to listen to you in 1950. And...
No, 93, and he died that year, and then I had my daughter who he never got to see. So I always think of my dad when I hear your voice. Okay, darling, thank you so much.
See you, Jen.
See you, darling. Bye-bye.
Bye. There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at maccatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.